Hello, today is Thursday, February the 12th of 2026, and I will be reading out of the pantograph, and we're going to go ahead and start with Time to Move On for a Mobile Vet. My name is Kayla Verhoeven. Thank you for joining us. Romani Walter of Smart Vet Retiring, Values Relationships. 4 hours ago. Normal. After nearly 15 years of caring for pets in living rooms, backyards, and during some of life's most tender moments, Dr. Romani Walter is retiring from veterinary care in central Illinois at the end of the month. I still have an amazing relationship and connections with a lot of people, both who are clients and staff members, said Walter, founder of Smart Vet Mobile Veterinary Service at 1537 Fort Jesse Road in Normal. The community is invited to celebrate Walter's career and legacy during a retirement open house from 5 to 7 p.m. on February the 27th at SmartVet. The clinic will close early that day to allow for staff, clients, and friends to gather in her honor. Walter launched SmartVet in 2011, operating out of her garage and her little smart car and equipped to bring veterinary services directly to clients' homes. The idea came about after a study showed a decrease of veterinary visits from pet owners, and one of the reasons was how stressful the visits could be for the pets. Walter said the idea is not dissimilar to how rural veterinarians used to operate, taking calls for larger farm animals and checking in on smaller companion pets all on the same visit. But eventually, office visits became more common for smaller companion pets. However, many pets still have issues traveling in vehicles, and some have not been trained for carriers, which made the idea of home visits for small pets less of a novelty and more of a needed option. Walter said, at the time, a mobile clinic option was not being widely offered in this area. I kind of meshed those back together a little bit and brought that back, Walter said. This quickly became a trusted model of care for pet owners in central Illinois to mitigate the stress of clinic visits for both pets and the owners. Walter said, a few months after starting SmartVet out of her car, she rented a space before purchasing a small facility on Beach Street. Then, in 2017, she moved SmartVet into its current facility on Fort Jesse Road to offer both in-office and mobile services. Some of our senior people just can't bring in their large dogs, or we have a lot of clients with mobility issues, so they really appreciate the fact that we just come to them, Walter said. And there's always the cat population. Cats are not fans of going into the carriers. Walter said the mobile visits are used primarily for cases that do not require large equipment, like x-rays or procedures like surgery. The more extensive veterinary services are provided in the clinic. Another aspect SmartVet's mobile services that clients have appreciated is pet and euthanasia, where clients can have a final goodbye with their pet at home or in a park instead of a client setting, Walter said. Natalie McKee, a client and owner of Bloomington Normal Audiology, said she has been going to Walter and SmartVet for about 9 years. Starting when her family adopted their dog, Patty Kate. It is very personal, and it is nice to have local businesses that want to have that relationship with their community, not only as patients, but also being active in the community, she said. She's really paid attention to what the community needed and has gone that extra mile to provide that and still have a traditional option for people that still want it. McKee said she previously knew of Walter through her volunteer work at Wishbone Canine Rescue and has seen how active and receptive she is in the community. Now, after almost 15 years, Walter is reaching the end of her journey with SmartVet. The veterinary said her decision to retire is part of her tendency to want to change directions in life every 10 years or so. She's originally from Belgium and plans to move back with her family this year. Walter said she will take time away from veterinary medicine, but may explore other options like a specialization or being a relief vet. We're going to miss her, but she's done a really good job building a team here. going from a single provider to growing and finding people that are providers that are like-minded to carry on what she's doing and have it be more than just a job, McKee said. As for SmartVet, Walter said she sold the practice to Heartland Veterinary Partners about 3 years ago, and it has been in a transition period. But since then, there have not been any changes to the culture or the staff that have shaped SmartVet for all these years. I don't think I realized what the connections I have made with some of these people were, she said. It has been really touching, and it will be difficult to walk away and say goodbye. But at the same time, we live once, and I just feel that I have to move on. In other news, the Congress debates masked officers. Partisan divide stalls DHS funding as deadline nears, by Lisa Mascaro, AP congressional correspondent 4 hours ago. ICE crackdown. Washington. Beyond the car windows being smashed, people tackled on city streets, or even a little child with a floppy bunny ear snow cap detained, the images of masked federal officers has become a flashpoint in the Trump administration's immigration enforcement operations. Not in recent memory has an American policing operation so consistently masked its thousands of officers from the public, a development that the Department of Homeland Security believes is an important option to safeguard employees from online harassment. But experts warn masking serves other purpose, inciting fear in communities and risks shattering norms, accountability, and trust between the police and its citizenry. Whether to ban the masks or allow the masking to continue has emerged as a central question in the debate in the Congress over funding Homeland Security ahead of Friday's midnight deadline, when it faces a partial agency shutdown. Humans read each other's faces. That's how we communicate, said Justin Smith, a former Colorado sheriff who is executive director and CEO of the National Sheriffs Association. When you have a number of federal agents involved in these operations and they cannot be identified, you can't see their face. It just tends to make people uncomfortable, he said. That's bringing up questions. Masks on federal agents have been one constant throughout the first year of the President Donald Trump's mass deportation operation. What began as a jarring image last spring, when a plain-clothed officer is drawing their masks, surrounded and detained a Tufts University doctoral student near her Massachusetts home, has morphed into familiar scenes in Los Angeles, Chicago, and other cities. The shooting deaths of two American citizens at the hand of federal immigration officers during demonstrations against ICE raids in Minneapolis sparked widespread public protest and spurred lawmakers to respond. Cameras on, masks off has become a rallying cry among Democrats, who are also insisting the officers wear body cameras as a way to provide greater accountability and oversight of the operations. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters at the Capitol that unmasking the federal agents is a quote-unquote hard red line in the negotiations ahead. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says on its website that its officers wear masks to prevent doxing, which can and has placed them and their families at risk. All ICE law enforcement officers carry badges and credentials and will identify themselves when required for public safety or legal necessity. Fueled with funds from the Trump's big tax cuts bills, which poured some $170 billion into Homeland Security, ICE has grown to become among the largest law enforcement operations in the nation. Last year, it announced it had more than doubled its ranks to 22,000, with rapid hiring and $50,000 signing bonuses. Homeland Security did not respond to an email request for further comment. Most Republicans say the current political climate leaves the immigration officers, and many of them to the job, exposed if their faces and identities are made public. Senator Tom Tillis, RNC, said he just can't agree with the Democrats' demand that the officers unmask themselves. You know, there's a lot of vicious people out there, and they'll take a picture of your face, and the next thing you know, your children or your wife or your husband are being threatened at home, he said. That's just the reality of the world that we're in. It appears no other policing agencies in the country regularly use masks on a widespread basis. Instead, masks are used during special operations, particularly undercover work or at times where large crowd control or protest situations, and when there is inclement weather or individual health concerns. Experts said only perhaps during the Ku Klux Klan raids or in the Old West has masking been a widely used tool. It is without precedent in modern American history, said American Civil Liberties Union Noreen Shaw in Washington. She said the idea of mass patrols on city streets seeking immigrants can leave people scared, confused, and about what they are encountering. When she suggested it as part of the point. I think it's calculated to terrify people, she said. I don't think anybody. This really feels like, okay, this is something we want to become a permanent fixture in our streets. Toward the end of the first Trump administration, Congress sought to clamp down after masked federal agents showed up in 2020 to quell protests in Portland and other cities. A provision requiring agents to clearly identify themselves was tucked into a massive defense authorization bill that Trump signed into law. Last year, California became the first state in the nation to ban most law enforcement officers, including federal immigration agents, from covering their faces. The Trump administration's Justice Department sued, saying the state's policies, quote-unquote, create risk for the agents. Smith of the Sheriff's Association said there's no easy answer to the current masking debate. He suggested perhaps a middle ground could be reached, one that would allow officers to wear masks, but also require their badge or other identifying numbers to be prominently displayed. Advocates said while unmasking the federal agents would be an important step, other restraints on immigration enforcement operations may be even more so. They are pushing Congress to curb the ability of ICE officers to rely on administrative warrants and immigration operations, particularly to enter people's homes, insisting such actions should require judicial warrants with sign-off from the courts. There is also an effort to end roving patrols. The ability of immigration officers to use a person's race, language, or job location to question their legal status, sometimes called Kavanaugh stops, after Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's concurring opinion to a Supreme Court decision last summer. In other news, the Epstein files. Bondi tells victims to speak up. Elena Durkin Richer and Eric Tucker with Stephen Groves, the Associated Press, 4 hours ago. Washington. Attorney General Pam Bondi told victims of Jeffrey Epstein on Wednesday to come forward with information about their abuse, as she sought to tamp down political turmoil over the Justice Department's handling of files related to the wealthy financier's sex trafficking investigations. In her first appearance before Congress since the release of the millions of additional Epstein files, Bondi addressed victims who were present in the hearing room, saying that she was, quote-unquote, deeply sorry for what they suffered. Bondi sought to fend off criticism from Democrats who accused her of ignoring victims. Any accusations of criminal wrongdoing will be taken seriously and investigated, the Attorney General said. Bondi's appearance before the House Judiciary Committee comes a year into her tumultuous tenure that amplified concerns that the Justice Department is using its law enforcement powers to target political foes of the president. Just a day earlier, the department sought to secure charges against Democratic lawmakers who produced a video urging military service members not to follow illegal orders. But in an extraordinary rebuke of prosecutors, a grand jury in Washington refused to return an indictment. The committee chairman, Representative Jim Jordan, Representative for Ohio, opened the hearing by repeating claims that the Justice Department under Democratic President Joe Biden was weaponized against Donald Trump and conservatives. Democrats and many good government advocates say it's Trump's own administration that politicized law enforcement. Bondi confronted a new wave of criticism after the release of millions of additional Epstein disclosures that survivors slammed as sloppy and incomplete. Congress passed the Epstein Files Transparency Act after the department abruptly announced in July that no more files would be released, even though it raised the hopes of conservative influencers and conspiracy theorists. In the hearing room, Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, the top Democrat on the committee, introduced several Epstein survivors and accused Bondi of perpetuating a cover-up. "You're siding with the perpetrators and you're ignoring the victims," Raskin said. "That will be your legacy unless you act quickly to change the course." Bondi struggled to move past the backlash over her handling of the Epstein files since distributing binders to a group of social media influencers at the White House in February of 2025. The binders included no new revelations about Epstein, leading to even more calls from Trump's base for the files to be released. Members of Congress were at the department this week to look through unredacted versions of the files. As a part of an arrangement with the Justice Department, lawmakers were given access to the more than 3 million released files in a reading room with four computers and were allowed to take handwritten notes. Democrats accused the department of redacting information that should have been made public, including information that could lead to scrutiny of Epstein's associates. Meanwhile, survivors slammed the department for inconsistent or non-existent redactions that allowed for the inadvertent release of nude photos and other private information. Department officials have defended their handling of the files, saying they took pains to protect survivors, but the errors were inevitable given the volume of the materials and the speed at which the department had to release them. The Associated Press and other media organizations are still reviewing millions of pages of documents, many of them previously confidential. An AP review of records shows that while investigators collected ample proof that Epstein sexually abused children, they found scant evidence the well-connected financier led a sex trafficking ring serving powerful men. Videos and photos seized from Epstein's homes in New York, Florida, and the U.S. Virgin Islands did not depict people being abused or implicate anyone else in his crimes, a prosecutor wrote in one 2025 memo. Veterans Video. The case involving lawmakers' video to military service members could provide additional fodder for Democrats to hammer Bondi and question how the Justice Department is using its investigative authority. The video, featuring Democrats who are veterans or have experience in the intelligence community, angered the administration, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth in particular. The Justice Department opened an investigation into the video, in which Democrat Senators Mark Kelly of Arizona and Elise Slotkin of Michigan, along with four other Democrats, urged the U.S. members to follow established military protocols and reject orders they believe to be unlawful. A grand jury in Washington declined to issue indictments Tuesday. It wasn't immediately clear whether prosecutors sought indictments against all six lawmakers or what charge or charges prosecutors attempted to bring. But it marked the latest instance of a grand jury rebuffing the Justice Department in cases involving critics of the administration. In auto news, auto dealers facing sticker shock. Prices seen as too high for many Americans as economy wavers, by Luke Ramseth, the Detroit News, 4 hours ago. Las Vegas. America's car dealers are coming to a stark realization. The new vehicles on their lots too often cost too much, and that could create trouble for their businesses in 2026. As the economy enters a moment of uncertainty, attendees of the annual National Automobile Dealers Association convention in Las Vegas last week kept mentioning the intensifying need for affordable vehicles. In response, dealers are set to stock their lots this year with the cheaper models and trims, and top off on used cars. Car prices continue to rise, Tom Castriota, a Florida Chevrolet dealer and NADA's outgoing chairman, told conference attendees, later underscoring the need to stock a quote-unquote full range of products at prices customers can afford. Dealers, experts, and other attendees painted a mixed picture of what they seen on the horizon. On one hand, higher earners are doing just fine. Many have watched their disposable income grow of late amid a largely robust stock market. Consumers are also expected to have some more cash in their pockets in the coming months, thanks to new tax breaks enacted as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Still, job and wage growth have slowed and are expected to stagnate this year. Consumer confidence fell through much of late of 2025, and in January, it slumped to its lowest level in more than 11 years. These trends come as new car prices keep pushing higher, currently averaging around $50,000, and forcing many buyers to stretch out loan lengths. The typical monthly payment is now $750, with buyers signing up to pay on average for 70 months. Other car-related costs have already been stressing consumers, such as skyrocketing insurance rates. When tallying up loan payments, insurance, fuel, and maintenance, the average monthly price tag for a new or used car has escalated from about $750 per month in 2019 to over $1,000 today, said Jeremy Robb, Cox Automotive Incorporated's chief economist. The conflicting economic indicators have many experts projecting a slight drop-off in new car sales for 2026. Cox anticipates 15.8 million units to be sold, a 2.4% decline. We think that 2026 is going to be a tough year, maybe the toughest in like 15 years to sell a car, said Rick Wainsel, Vice President of Data Science and Analytics at Catalyst IQ, which provides data and marketing for dealers and automakers. And it's not to say that sales are going to drop to the floor or anything, he said. It's just harder, much harder sales environment because of macroeconomic effects, consumer confidence. A new report from Catalyst flagged that vehicles discounting has recently gotten more aggressive, but that sales haven't followed and inventories are now creeping up. Today's Flick Fact, February the 11th of 2026. Question: can you name the two most popular months in 2025 to have a baby in Illinois? Answer: from Illinois Hospital Networks, July 2025 was identified as the busiest month for births in Illinois facilities, followed closely by September. September is annually the busiest month in a year for births, according to Illinois Department of Public Health statistics, largely, they say, because of the number of conceptions during the December holiday seasons. How time flies. 100 years ago, on February 11th of 1926, Bloomington has landed another important industry. Negotiations, which have been in progress for several months, were finally concluded. Tyree Automobile Radiator Manufacturing Company of Chicago has agreed to move to the Evergreen City and will be located in the plant of the Illinois Tractor Company on East Lincoln Street. 75 years ago, on February the 11th of 1951. No comment. That's all Paul Harvey could say, February the 10th, about his fence climbing episode this week on the Argonne Laboratories. He spoke here at the 50th Annual Association of Commerce Banquet at the Scottish Rite Temple. The Chicago Radio News commentator declared that those two words are, quote-unquote, the toughest speech in the world. Mr. Harvey wouldn't even tell a pantograph reporter how old he is. 50 years ago, on February the 11th of 1976, it doesn't look very good. Nothing has really changed. That was Bernard J. Grosso's comment February 11th on the subject of contract talks between the Eureka Company and the 1,700 Eureka factory employees, represented by Grosso and Lodge 1000 of the International Association of Machinists. 25 years ago, on February the 11th of 2001, local bee enthusiasts met February the 10th at the McLean County Farm Bureau in Bloomington for a workshop. Attendees said they went to learn the basics of beekeeping and keep up with the current information. Honeybees tend to be extremely gentle. They are a good choice for a hobby, said the editor of an Area Beekeepers Association newsletter. Today's Flick Fact. Question. Today is Abe Lincoln's 217th birthday. When he was practicing law in McLean County, where or what, excuse me, did they do to McLean County Courthouse furniture so he could work there? Answer. His legs were so long, they had to cut out the sides of the desk from which he worked. That's so Abe could fit them under the desk. How time flies. 100 years ago, on February 12th in 1926, Bloomington and Winnipeg clasped hands across the festal board at the Illinois Hotel last evening, through the medium of a transcontinental highway known as the Jefferson. The Dominion and Uncle Sam's Domain are united in a fraternal bond, as firm as the concrete slab which stretches from the territory to the north to the Gulf of Mexico. 75 years ago, on February the 12th of 1951, Funk Brothers Seed Company will offer $100,000 worth of preferred stock to be used to finance expansion of the company's soybean solvent plant. 50 years ago, on February the 12th of 1976, 47 acres at the southeast corner of US 66 and Illinois 9 could become the home of another major shopping center. The area incorporates Zaire Plaza and 40 acres of vacant land. Indication of a possible shopping center was given February the 10th as developer Jack Snyder sought rezoning of the 40-acre area. 25 years ago, on February the 12th of 2001, fathers and daughters had a chance to bond on February the 11th at the third annual Daddy-Daughter Dance at the Miller Park Pavilion. More than 60 couples, girls ages 3 to 11, and their fathers met in semi-formal attire for an early Valentine's date. The date gave fathers a chance to flatter their daughters as many girls bounced on their dad's knees, shared hugs, and twirled at the end of their father's fingertips. When you're allowed to bond like this, you realize what parenting is all about, said a father also who attended the dance event last year. Local Spotlight. BCPA ranked top 10 venue for ticket sales in January by Olivia Jacobs 17 hours ago. Bloomington. The Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts was ranked as a top 10 venue nationwide for January, based on a ticket sale and capacity. The BCPA was ranked number 10 as part of Pollstar's top venues in the last 30 days, venues of the month with a 751 to 1,500 seating capacity. The Bloomington venue has a capacity of 1,166 and sold 4,750 tickets as of January 2026. There were other top-ranked venues as well as follows: Blue Gate Performing Arts in Shipshewana, Indiana; the Music Hall in Portsmouth, New Hampshire; Gallows Center, Mary Stuart's Roger Theater in Modesto, California; Thalia Hall in Chicago; Creed Theater in Wausau, Wisconsin; the 930 Club in Washington, D.C.; the Lincoln Theater in Washington, D.C.; McMinion's Crystal Ballroom in Portland, Oregon; and Mayo Performing Arts in Morristown, New Jersey. Thank you for listening today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and I will be with you again for the second part of the pantograph. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Stay safe. Enjoy family and friends, and enjoy your Valentine's Day. Thank you for listening.